to the eastern portion of your lovely state, but never have had the chance to make it out west. As Barry noted, I have spent time in Washington, D.C. The last time I was out there, in fact, there was a big traffic jam coming into downtown, and I was wondering what was going on, and the guy came up, knocked on the window of the car, and said, hey, there's a bunch of terrorists. They've collected up all the members of Congress, the House, and the Senate, and they want $100 million in ransom, or otherwise they're going to douse them in gasoline and set the whole thing on fire. And so we're going around asking for donations and asking, well, how much are people giving? He said, oh, about a gallon. That is a joke, okay? There you go. All right. And just so long as you don't figure that there aren't important things being talked about in Washington. There's been a lot of, talk about the name of the professional sports team in Washington, the Redskins. They've had that name for a long time. In view of recent activities in Washington, however, Dan Snyder, the owner of the Redskins, issued a statement just this morning saying, effective immediately, as soon as they can get new letterhead and uniforms and everything else, they will now be known as, because they feel the term is derogatory and they do sympathize with the negative connotations it has, they will now be known as the Mid-Atlantic Redskins. So, lots of important stuff going on in Washington. We do have a lot of things to go over this morning. I know some of you are probably fans of the Three Stooges. As we wound down last year, I think we updated the crew just a little bit. Inaction in Washington in this case is one word. It's not two, okay? We also saw lawmakers end up coming very close to that fiscal cliff, pushing us almost over, but they're very proud of themselves that by kicking the can down the road, they have indeed averted catastrophe. So they are quite the group, it seems like, in Washington these days. Want to go over just real quick the overall economic picture, because as Barry correctly noted, this is a global market, and you have to be aware of what's going on in the world. U.S. economic prospects, of course, are very important for all that. We've got some slow growth in the U.S. economy. We get another update tomorrow on the third quarter, but it looks like we're going to be sub 2%, which coming out of a great recession like we saw, this is not running at a clip that you'd like to see or that normally we would see at this point of a recovery. We're looking, though, in 2014, things are going to perk up. Our CEO, Dr. Bruce Scherer, is looking for that organic growth. By that we mean that growth that is spurred by economic activity within the country. The housing sector, which has performed very well outside of a few hiccups this summer, the housing sector is one of those that does provide that organic growth. Those house sales lead to decorating, lead to other sales, other economic activity that translates through the economy of this great country. So it's important to know that we are looking for more organic growth, and that's coming out with less government involvement in that. And as you look at everything from the economic perspective, it's important to know what the rules are. Now, you may not like the rules, but it's important to know what those rules are. Again, this is just a quick update. Some of the key numbers, those business fixed investments, keep an eye on those as they are a barometer of where businesses are directing their efforts moving forward. As I said, the GDP, we're looking for close to 3% growth coming up in 2014, so an uptick for this U.S. economy, which would be a very good situation. Note that bottom line, too, the federal budget surplus. Those are negative numbers. That's a deficit. Now, yes, it is declining very dramatically. We've got a number of activities that have kind of combined to produce that, but those deficit numbers could start going the other way very quickly coming in the out years of 2015, 16. So keep an eye on that as you go through, as we go through the presentation today. And as you listen to everything, just keep in mind, while our deficit predictions are coming down now, they could very quickly turn back to the upside. Think entitlements in there, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, etc. That's the areas to keep an eye on. Now, this town of Washington, as I'm sure Greg, with his years of experience in Washington, will back me up on, this is one dysfunctional city. at this point. The healthcare reform woes that we've seen, those have been very well publicized and have brought the term glitch to be an official explanation now from the U.S. government. So you can always remember that when you're having those calving problems, you can just say, well, there was a glitch, and know that you've got the backing of the U.S. government to be able to use that term. The intelligence situation in the country and with our neighbors, etc., you know, eavesdropping on phone calls, with Ms. Merkel, etc., that's creating kind of a cloud over the U.S. as well. Executive orders, now these are going to be something to watch, okay? These are ways that the administration can move their policy goals forward even if they don't get Congress to go along, or if Congress opposes them, they can go the executive order route. Now, we have seen, too, the change in the U.S. Senate just recently, and this could be a very important one, where they removed the requirement for 60 votes to approve nominees. That goes to all but basically Supreme Court judges and legislation, but lower court judges can now be approved on just a simple majority vote. That's how divisive Washington has become. And what's important to remember this about is those judges are the ones that would hear cases that will be brought against executive orders that are put forward. Now, if those judges that are put in place now have a more favorable disposition towards this administration's goals and policies, they're going to be there for a while. So that has implications down the road that you've got to be aware of as things move forward. The Farm Bill, of course, we've still got discord between the parties there, between the House and the Senate, etc. And there are a growing number of regs that are backlogged at OMB. That regulation on renewable fuels standard for 2014 sat over at OMB for several weeks before it was finally announced. And, of course, our foreign policy issues with all the events in Syria, Iran, Iraq, etc. So there's a lot of issues that have really kind of complicated what goes on in this town. And, of course, Thanksgiving for 2013 did kind of come off with a little different spin. That's the healthcare.gov website that he is pardoning, by the way. It's for those of you in the back who maybe can't see that. So there's politics to play everywhere. Now, to be fair, it's not just Mr. Obama's fault. This is what the current Congress has done. See the big red circle down at the end and that little blue chart line? That is the number of laws enacted by this Congress. Now, I think it's pretty hard not to argue this is a do-nothing group. Also, we've got some key issues that, again, lawmakers kind of punted down the road. December is looming here as a very important time. We've got mostly discussions going on with the budget folks, the budget committee that was put together to try to come up with an overall agreement. They're holding talks. They don't have any public sessions scheduled as of yet, but they continue to talk amongst themselves to try to get things worked out. Again, that deadline, December 13. Our debt limit has been increased till about February the 7th of 2014, and we've got a continuing resolution. That's when Congress basically decides they can't put together all the X's and O's and put them in the right place to get the spending bills, 13 of them that run the U.S. government. Can't get those done, so they just continue the spending levels at the prior fiscal year generally with a few tweaks. That only runs until January 15, 2014. So we've got another batch of decisions coming up in Washington. The sequestration, those across-the-board cuts that very few like and most agree are pretty heavy-handed, but nonetheless, they are there unless they try to get rid of them, which is a possibility as part of this overall budget deal. Tax extenders, there's not a lot of room working on that one just yet, and Senator Max Baucus, the chairman of the Finance Committee, has offered up his tax package, including some ag provisions in there, but it still remains to be seen just how much traction that's going to gain with the focus on what's going on the budget side of the equation. Immigration reform. We need some bipartisanship to show up here. There has been some, but it still has really been a relatively partisan issue as things have unfolded so far. key right now, is this going to be a legacy issue for Mr. Obama in view of the healthcare.gov website issues? He may want to use this as a legacy issue and get something done on it. But it's going to be probably a 2014 election issue that's going to crop up, and you'll see more people talk about that. The Senate has passed theirs. The House is really going to be more of a piecemeal approach. It's going to be different than the Senate. So even once we get something out of the House, it still has to be reconciled between the two chambers. And also the key portion of this is going to be on the ag and seasonal workers. Real quick, the key portions to watch when you're listening to anybody talk about immigration reform. It's one, border security, and that's not keeping the Canadians from coming south, okay? That's not where the focus is on this one. Border security issues, that's got to be key. How do you secure the U.S. border from illegal immigrants? The e-verify system, can we electronically verify that a worker that shows up with cards, credentials, etc., is indeed that worker and can, you know, is legal to work in the United States? That seasonal worker issue on agriculture is going to be very important. Ag is one of the few industries that relies a lot on seasonal workers, and if those seasonal workers aren't there, there can be some great losses out there. And also key, that path to earned legalization, earned citizenship. They are not going to get to the front of the line. They are going to be put in line for it, but they are not going to jump to the head of the line. They're going to have to wait, like many others who have come to this country and follow the legal channels to do so. The Senate again passed their bill in June, overwhelming majority there. Piecemeal reform is what's going to come out of the House again. So it's unlikely we're going to see a big package put together before we get to the November elections. Renewable fuel standard. This is one that causes a lot of heartburn in some areas of the country. And in Iowa, where I currently reside, it is an issue that a lot of folks really like, of course, with the corn that's produced in the state of Iowa. In 2013, the corn ethanol portion was 13.8 billion gallons. Under law, it's 14.4 billion gallons. But EPA, in their proposal, trimmed that. They did not propose a specific number on corn, but rather a range of numbers to use on corn. There's several things that have kind of combined here to cause this discussion to come up. One is that we've got those legislative targets that were set back in 2007. Now, y'all know when you do budgets, you've got to make assumptions on what happens in the future. But those assumptions that were made in 2007 were made with a very different set of outlooks. In fact, we are considerably below where they have projected in terms of gasoline usage. That's a combination of things going on. The U.S. economic downturn had a lot more people, keeping money in their pockets and trying not to spend as much at the gas pump. Higher mileage standards on automobiles. You can travel farther on that gallon of gas. That means you're going to have lower gasoline usage. And with the combination of those two, you've really dramatically lowered the gasoline use in this country from where it was projected to be in 2007 when the mandates were put together. So where does that leave us now? For 2013, EPA did make some adjustments. They adjusted the cellulosic ethanol side, and they extended the RFS compliance. Now, this is kind of a wonky thing, if you will, but the companies that are required to show compliance with the RFS now have until June to prove that they met the terms. Normally, that's the end of February. So they extended it to give them more time to prove that they had met the requirements for 2013. Biodiesel was unchanged. The tax credit for biodiesel is still out there, but it's winding down at the end of this year. Key there is whether or not it gets extended again. If it does, that could turn into a budget issue as well. For 2014, EPA did make some adjustments. Their proposed package, which went into the Federal Register last week, would basically put in a range of about 12.7 billion to 13.2 billion gallons of corn-based ethanol. So that is not only down from the legal requirements spelled out in law, but it's also down from the 2013 level. So EPA listened and heard a lot of feedback on this and did lower that requirement, along as they also adjusted the cellulosic and advanced biofuels totals in there as well. The final rule on this is probably going to come anywhere from about the first quarter of 2014 to as late as possibly June. You could also see that compliance deadline extension as a part of a final 2014. The key is also going to be, is EPA going to come forward and put some recommendations out there for 2015? You've got lawsuits more than likely coming from some in the ethanol industry as they maintain EPA had no standing under law to use the blend wall, that spot where we really can't put any more ethanol into the nation's fuel supply, as far as the number of gallons used, et cetera. So we've got that. Also, those renewable identification numbers that are out there, they're called RINs. There's going to be investigation on those because that market has been very, very volatile. Real bottom line here, you're not going to see biofuels legislation coming out of this Congress, EPA in particular with their 2014 plan. Until they finalize that, lawmakers are not going to get into the game and do anything. So put anything that you had as your thoughts in terms of biofuels legislation, just kind of wipe that off the slate right now. Greg's going to talk a lot more about trade issues in particular or trade prospects in certain countries. Overall, the Trans-Pacific Partnership talks, those have gone on, but not without their hiccups. Odds are they are going to get them finalized, but what we're still lacking is trade promotion authority. That, of course, allows the administration to bring a trade deal to Congress for an up or down vote. No amendments are possible. But then you get that trade adjustment assistance for agriculture component thrown in there, and that starts to get a little bit dicey. Officials are talking on the Brazil cotton case. Brazil took us to the WTO, ruled that our cotton program ran against our commitments. We are paying, or had been paying, Brazil a certain amount every month. To an annual total, but USDA stopped those payments as of October 1, saying they, one, lacked the authority, and two, if they did make them, they'd have to be cut by the sequester amount. So Brazil is already signaling, well, we could come back with our retaliation list. That's why the U.S. and Brazil are talking about this issue right now. WTO is mulling the situation with COOL. I'll talk more about that in a couple seconds here. Non-trade tariff barriers, those are really a heartburn point, I know, for the U.S. cattle industry, especially when you get to countries like Russia where they just decide one day that they don't need the meat. And so, and yet, we not have U.S. meat in here no more. Does not meet quality standards. Then, as soon as their economic situation turns around, they need demand, etc. Then all of a sudden, yeah, good to have U.S. meat come in. Yeah, now, okay. So those non-tariff trade barriers are ones that are headaches, and they are going to continue. The key question is, though, does the U.S. have the right strategy to deal with all this? We really need some trade policy changes here. The last time we had a major reform of U.S. trade policy was 1978. Just look at the difference in the figures. We had ag exports then of, what, $30 billion, $29 billion. Now we're at $135 to $140 billion. That means there's time for a change. Undersecretary for Trade seen as part of the next farm bill. Country of origin labeling, May 23rd, the final rule. The enforcement of that has started. That, of course, the rule that says you've got to have a label that says where the animal was born, where the animal was raised, where it was slaughtered. And those little lines on that UPC code sticker are getting awful jam-packed. The WTO panel has been set. This is the same panel that made the original determination, so they don't have to get up to speed near as much, but they've still got a lot of work to do. That will come sometime here in 2014, and no matter what happens, whether the U.S. is found to have come into compliance or not into compliance, somebody's going to issue a challenge at the WTO. They're going to appeal it. Either Canada and Mexico, if the WTO panel says, yes, the new U.S. rule does meet the trade world rules, and the U.S. will, if they say, no, you didn't meet world trade rules. So there's a challenge coming. That's still going to push any final situation back beyond that. Mr. Vilsack is issuing a plea in the Farm Bill to let's let this process of the WTO run its course. So he's clearly wanting to see COOL implemented, in place, being enforced, regardless of what happens in the Farm Bill. Early on, it looked like that Farm Bill placeholder that's there was going to be filled with repeal of COOL. Now it's being talked about a North American label. that that animal was born, raised, and slaughtered in North America. And I know a lot of you are aware that we have a North American cattle industry. So that kind of makes sense. I know, I just said something makes sense and Washington in the same sentence. Please forgive me. So we've got that one, but country of origin labeling is out there. Now, how do your neighbors up north view this? This slide here shows basically how it doesn't show every slaughter plant in the U.S., but these are slaughter plants that will accept cattle A, B, and C, A being those that are born, raised, slaughtered in the U.S., and then B being those that are born somewhere else, raised, and slaughtered here, C, that they just come here to be slaughtered. So this is what they're looking at when they look at the U.S. market. And the size of those little items on the screen there also denote the size of the plants in question. So the Farm Bill, are we ever going to get one? This process has been very long and involved. This graphic here underscores that for you. We started the Farm Bill process in 2010, folks. We're almost at 2014. We don't have a Farm Bill. We're further down the road because at least we got one out of both the House and Senate. Now we've got the House and the Senate talking. The Farm Bill principles will meet this week. The principles being House Ag Committee Chairman Frank Lucas. He chairs the conference committee. His Democrat counterpart in the House, Mr. Colin Peterson from Minnesota. Debbie Stabenow, chair of the Senate Ag Committee. And Thad Cochran, the ranking Republican. The basic tenets that a lot of people have put on this Farm Bill. It has to work for all crops in all regions of the country. A lot of this is from Frank Lucas, the chair of the conference committee. Farm policy has to be able to protect against multi-year deep price declines like what we saw in the 1990s and what some people fear we could be seeing and set up to see here again in the future. And do no harm to crop insurance. Make improvements where possible. Crop insurance has become a very important program, closing in on 300 million net insured acres in the country. So it's a risk management tool a lot of people use. Supplemental revenue assistance, so SURE payments, that's not in either Farm Bill at this point. Permanent ag law, this is just kind of one to keep an eye on because you're going to hear about permanent farm law coming up. Dairy will be the first one mentioned. In fact, the House is working on now a package to address the dairy situation. Basically, what happens as of when we get into January, you get what's called parity pricing coming back into place and all kinds of fun stuff that goes with that. Basically, estimates are you'd push the milk price up at the store to around $7 to $8 a gallon under that type of a pricing scenario. So that, if nothing else, would probably be something to cause lawmakers to do something. Again, do no harm to crop insurance. That's one of the key guidelines out there. What are some of those possibilities? Either reducing those premiums, the harvest price option, maybe get rid of that. That could happen. Reducing those crop revenue coverage possibilities to upgrade your coverage there. You can, maybe limiting how they divide up into separate units, etc. Probably the biggest one that seems to be on most people's radar is that bottom one, reducing subsidies to high-grossing farms. In other words, they get less of a subsidy. Right now, crop insurance program is about 60% subsidized premiums. But that's also what's helping crop insurance. Farmers have at least 40% of their own money in the game. Livestock disaster assistance, those programs are in both versions of the bill, so that should be something ideally we sure wish it was in place to address things like what happened in South Dakota here. But that is, more than likely something you may see come back and be dealt with anyway. But those livestock disaster programs are indeed in there. So where do we go forward on this Farm Bill? The conference is underway. The principals meet again this week. They may call other lawmakers back in, but it seems unlikely at this stage. So we've got that. One of the keys here is that nutrition program. Senator Stabenow has been very steadfast in her opposition to going beyond the $4 billion that the Senate had in their Farm Bill. The House version cuts nearly $40 billion off of the nutrition programs. It isn't going to be either of those two numbers. Okay, it's going to be somewhere in between. Indications are right now Republicans will be willing to take a $10 billion reduction over 10 years back to their leadership to get the final say on that. So that's going to be really key, how that nutrition program stuff comes up. Now, deficit reduction talks, those budget talks. Remember I started out talking about that? Farm bill savings could come in there. If you're looking at a bill that saves $20, $24 billion, why, that comes in mighty handy when you want to put a budget deal together and you want to do some spending in other areas. So we can't rule out that you'll see the farm bill moved into an overall budget package. So keep your eyes on that. And most everybody is working on trying to get this thing done this year. Here's some of the factors in why that farmer safety net is very important. Again, potential changes in the market ahead when you've got a lot more corn, less being used for ethanol. Do the math. That is a positive, at least for your operations. Higher interest rates. When is the Fed going to start tapering their asset purchase program? That's going to raise interest rates. They've pledged to keep their Fed funds rate low well into the future, and right now that is into at least 2015. But there's going to be some short-term increases in here. Watch that 10-year bond rate. If it starts getting close to 3%, folks are going to get a little bit nervous there. Higher U.S. dollar. As we start getting things going and the U.S. economy improves, that's going to raise the value of the dollar. That can start negatively impacting U.S. exports as well. Normal weather is something I think a lot of folks, not just in crop-growing areas of the country, would like to see. Lower prices. How low really depends on how much we build up the carryover supplies of corn in particular. Some of the first things to watch for any signs of cracks in the U.S. farm economy will be equipment sales and land values. Right now it looks like land values are leveling out, but don't despair. Most lenders tell us that they could weather a 30% downturn in land values and maybe have only 1% of their loans be non-performing. So, real quick, on the elections, the House is very likely to retain control. The Senate, the key is going to be the candidates. And we think probably the Tea Party may have run their course. After all, they're probably now in their second and third stringers coming up. And, of course, when you get to the White House, it's who the candidates are. Charlie Cook, a Cook Political Report, minimal net change, a seat or two in either direction. In other words, Republicans aren't going to increase their majority, nor are the Democrats going to gain control. They've got to get 17 seats. Single digits is all we see them picking up. This just gives you an idea that sort of multicolored area in the middle. Those are all really the competitive seats that are out there. That's it. Otherwise, everything else is either very steadfastly Democrat or Republican. In the Senate, again, the Republicans could get 4 to 6 seats, but it's not a guarantee yet. There's been races before that they have done well in, and they have not. South Dakota here, you're one of the ones people are watching, along with Montana. So a lot of you folks in the audience here are going to be at the center of what's going on in the U.S. Senate races coming up with lawmakers stepping down at the end of the year. So really, there's some opportunities. Keep an eye on Kentucky. That's where Mitch McConnell is from as well. As far as the presidential nominees, the Canwins up there, Marco Rubio, Chris Christie, and yes, another Bush, Jeb, is a possibility. He's the one that probably fits into that Canwin category. The Cants, Mr. Cruz, I do not like green eggs and ham, etc., nor him as a candidate. Yes, that is a joke. There you go. See, they put the coffee in the other room. They should have put it back here. It's Mr. Santorum, from former senator from Pennsylvania, also not in that Canwin category. The maybes, Mr. Walker and Mr. Ryan, both from Wisconsin. And also, not Mr. Jindal, but South Dakota's John Thune. So that's a real quick look at things. I realize I've stretched just a skosh over. I appreciate your time. And with that, Barry, let's bring our next contributor up to the podium. Thank you all very much.